Well, good morning again to each of you. It's good to be together. Seems like last week I was missing. It was at the BMA conference. And so we're together again, and we're going to be continuing our series in Ephesians. Some passages you go in bigger chunks, and I hit Ephesians 6, and it seems like I'm going snail's pace. But there's so much practicality in it that I want to take our time. A little background for those of you who weren't here, and to refresh our memories. Last time we talked about, started in Ephesians 6:1, children obey your parents, and the Lord, for this is right. And so how's it going, children? Remember we talked about three things. You obey willingly, cheerfully and immediately. Willingly, cheerfully, and immediately. We talked about the next stage of life in your being your teen years, your young adult years, how to honor your mom and dad and obey them then. And then we talked about adult years as well. We're going to move into where I left off. There's two things I didn't get finished the last time we had a number of people share from our church on what it was like to honor their parents. And there's two questions I wanted to address before we go on to verse 4 on provoking your children to anger. And so I want to spend a little bit of time talking about parents who have hurt you deeply. We would all like to say we came from homes that were, everything was really healthy and good, and a lot of us did, but some of us may not have come from homes that were healthy. And so how do you honor parents who hurt you deeply, physically, sexually, emotionally? There's people who, parents who are not controlled by the Holy Spirit and who are controlled by selfish desires and treat their children unkindly and in wrong ways. Both Matthew, Mark, and Luke all give reference to people who offend the little ones will be severely punished. All three Gospels talk about that. That a millstone would be better than you'd be drowned than to offend the little one. So it's a big deal to offend a child of yours that God has entrusted to you. So my list is by no means inclusive, but there's a number of things I wrote down to help us think through how to approach parents who have hurt you deeply. And so my first advice would be to face it and don't fake it. Some people try to bury their pain like it never happened, and hopefully it'll go away. If I bury it deep enough and long enough, that it's going to go away and I'll never have to deal with it. So I think we need to, instead of faking like it never happened, we need to be honest and face it. And as you face it and process it with God and a close friend, I don't think telling the world would be a good idea, or telling everybody, but find a close friend that you can confide in and talk to them about it and work towards forgiveness and release. Protect your heart from bitterness. Forgive so you're not controlled by it and that you can go on with your life. Bitterness is, and unforgiveness is like eating poison and hoping the other person dies. The hurts from our past just stay in our hearts, and they can turn into bitterness and destroy our lives. Work towards forgiveness and release. Next thing is you honor your parents by being honest. And again, the temptation is to just deny it and don't be honest with your parents. But I believe being honest with your parents and say, you know what, can we talk? Like, this is what I'm really feeling. This is what's happened to me. This is where I'm at. And I want to honor you by being honest. And I want a new relationship. And I want to stop the cycle that's been going on. I want a new path for us. And you know, only God knows the pain you're feeling, but only God can bring healing to your heart as well. So as you work through this, keep that in mind, that people can say, yeah, I know what you're feeling, I know what you're going through, but really, only God knows your pain, and only God can bring healing. Next thing is honor them, if you can. Honor them in some way. And if you don't have anything good to say, maybe it's best not to say anything. But maybe you can honor them for merely being providing for you in some way. Find something you can honor them. If nothing else, respect the position. Regardless of the person, respect the position of a father and a mother. There's just ways you don't talk to a father or a mother because of their position. I think of King of David and how he respected the position of Saul, of how he had every opportunity to take him out. But he said, I will not, because he's God's chosen leader. He respected the position. Last one is give thanks. Thank them. Find something you can thank them for. Maybe it's because they worked hard, but find the way you can thank them for what they've given to you as a child. And remember, you're not blessing everything they've done when you do that. So we can honor our parents by being honest with them, not faking that it didn't happen, going to them and talking to them, and saying you want a different path forward. Honor them in some way and give thanks. Thank them for something they've done in your life. I know it's not a 1-2-3 step and it's all done, but there's just some ideas of how to address parents who may have hurt you and how you can find healing. The next point I wanted to talk about is how to parent honorably as parents. How can we treat our children with honor? And the first thing I want to say is see our children as blessings. They're gifts. They're blessings from God that they have been given to you by God. It's an incredible blessing. Psalms 127:3, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So are children of one's youth. Happy is a man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak of them with their enemies in the gates. They're gifts to be nurtured and to be launched into the world. And we're going to talk about a little more about nurturing children a little later on. But seeing them as blessings help you raise them to be a blessing. So if you see your children as a blessing, it helps you raise them to be a blessing to other people. And you pour into your children, not just for their sake, but you're looking down the road to your children's children. And how you impact their lives is greatly going to, in fact, impact the next generation. And you look back in family history, and you can see that happen, how one child took a different course, and generations either were blessed by it or were suffered because of that choices they've made. Children are your responsibility. Children are your responsibility to train spiritually. It's not the school's responsibility. Yes, they help if they go to a Christian school. It's not the church's responsibility. Yes, they can help and support. But parents, it's your responsibility to train them spiritually, to lead them to a knowledge of Jesus, to cultivate their heart so that when the Lord speaks to them, that they'll want to give their life to Jesus. They will make friends with the people you hang out with. So the people you associate with, parents, your children will probably be friends with their children. So it's important who you associate with, because your children will probably associate with them as well, with their children. Protect them from harm and from evil. It's huge that we can't shield them from everything, but we can protect them in ways from harm. In our world, there's lots of things that they face with the internet, influences. Help protect them. Show them how to handle it. Lead by example. And last of all, they'll probably marry someone like you. Not in all cases, but they'll probably marry someone like you, parents. So how are we doing? And the third thing is, children follow your example. If you had a picture of my dad and my two brothers standing, talking to a salesman, we all stood the same way. We kind of stood on one hip. It was hilarious. Like, I didn't think about it, but different people picked it up. Like, the Furmans all stand the same way. So we lead by example. But the habits, the way you talk, the way you treat your wife, the way you treat other people, you're giving your children an example. And we can honor our children by giving them good examples to follow. How about your attitudes towards church, towards authority, towards leaders? They're following how you talk and how you act. Just ask some Sunday school teachers that teach the kids from about age 3, 4, 5. They hear a lot about parents. And it's interesting. Joshua said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua didn't take a vote and say, "Children, who do we want to serve?" Joshua made a decision, "We will serve the Lord." And so parents, is it settled in your mind who you're serving? Along with this is letting go. We come to a point in our lives where our children leave our nest. And how do you let them go well? You know, we pour into their lives. We spend time and money and energy, and one day they're gone. How do you do that well? I think it's so important that we see them again as gifts to nurture, to train, that someday we're going to launch them into the world. And if we have that as our background and our foundation of how we're going to raise our children, the letting go won't be as hard. If we see it as incrementally letting them go, they grow up, they grow out of a stage, they progress to another stage, and little by little we let them go. And hopefully, along the way, you've cultivated a relationship with your children that is open. They can communicate well with you. They can come to you with questions. They can say, ask you anything about life. And there's that open communication. And when the time comes to launch them into the world, whether it's through marriage or they go out on their own, you can look at it as not the end of a relationship, but it's a different realigning of a relationship. The Bible talks a lot about, or talks some about, when the man and woman get married, they're supposed to leave father and mother. They're supposed to leave them, to go, let go. Jesus later addresses the issue in Matthew 19, verse 6. What God has joined together, let no man put asunder. So what God has joined together, nothing's supposed to come between that. No father-in-law, no mother-in-law, no mom or dad. It's supposed to come between the husband and the wife. And one of the most common sources of marital conflict outside of money is how to deal with in-laws and with parents and the relationship between the two, especially if they're coming out of a healthy relationship where they got along well. It's so hard to cut the apron strings. And a lot of times we just buy extensions and the strings just get a little longer. And we tend to parent from afar. I believe no relationship outside of your relationship with God is more important than your relationship with your spouse. And we need to remember that. I've talked to a number of older people of how to do this well. How do you let go well? And how do you handle your urges to parent after they leave? Now, young people, you're not going to identify with this, but it's true. As parents, our children get married, and we have this urge to parent our children who are adults and parents. I'll be honest, we do. And my mom and dad are sitting here, they probably wanted to do the same thing to me. So what is our responsibility? And in my dialogue with older people, time and time again, they come back and say, pray, pray, pray. I would have done more praying and less talking. So last of all, how to parent honorably is pray, pray, pray. Letting go. I want to speak to the married ones now, young marrieds. And married people in general. Letting go mentality. You know, from the time they're born, I remember James Dobson said this, we're preparing our children to go. So incrementally, we're letting them go step by step. We're transitioning from one phase to the next. And we give them more responsibility, a little more responsibility, and we let go a little bit more here. They jump out of their crib, so we put them in a bed. And little by little, we're giving them freedom until we launch them. And if we have the let go mentality when they get married and go off on their own, I don't think it's going to be as much struggle as if we try to keep them tight. And then when they leave, we don't know how to respond. Cultivate a trusting relationship. I think it's so important when we are dialoguing with parents that we have a relationship of trust, and we create that in our growing up years. What God has joined together, no one come between. Let me go back to where I was last sermon, where I talked about the stage three of honoring our parents. We talk about appreciating them, ask them for advice, stay in touch, and provide for them. How do we leave yet still honor our parents? Leaving does not mean withdrawal. When we leave home does not mean we're going to withdraw and not relate. It's just a different kind of relationship. Does not mean withdrawal. And remember what honoring means: to respect, to love, admiration, affirmation for their sacrifice and efforts in raising you. So as you go, young people, young marrieds, as you go, remember the honor piece in honoring them as you go in your new relationship. It's so important to make your love and commitment clear to them while also switching your primary allegiance to your spouse. There's going to be some cases where you come from maybe a single home where the father was maybe passed away or is not there. And you feel a sense of commitment to your mother. And how are you going to handle that relationship? I believe it's important that you verbally tell your, if it's a single parent, of your love and commitment to them. Even in this different relationship of you are now husband and wife, and you're now on your own. But you convey, I'm still going to be committed and love you and be there for you as well. Before I go there, another thought I had, I talked about having the open communication with your parents that you can go back after you're married and you can ask for advice. You say, what do you think about this? How do you handle this situation? I think one thing that would be important is that you ask your spouse, hey, what do you think about going to mom and dad for some advice? Instead of calling up on the fly and say, what do you think about this? And then your spouse would find out about it later. Have that communication together with your wife or husband and say, hey, I want to talk to mom or dad about this. What do you think? And be together on it. I think that would be a healthy way to interact. Leaving means a healthy, God-ordained realignment of a parent-child relationship. So as you leave, it's not withdrawal, it's not isolation, but it's just a different relationship and it needs to be a healthy one. And there needs to be communication and respect from the parents to the child and from the children to the parents, that there's respect and honor. All right, let's move into verse 4. The last part that he talks about as far as the family relationship is, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. The word fathers here is translated patero, and it can be used as both parents. As in Hebrews 11, it's the same word. It addresses father and mother. So it says fathers here, but I think it's okay to address fathers and mothers, that you do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the honor, train them in the admonition of the Lord. It'd be nice if everyone, every parent, realized that their role from God is to train them in this way. But we realize in our society is not the case. In a poll taken of unmarried people, how many want to get married and how many don't want to get married? The poll was 46% wanted to get married and 54% said they don't want to get married. But yet they still want to have children. They still have children. And so children are being born into homes where mom and dad are not married. Another poll says, is the ideal marriage a husband providing and a wife being a homemaker? 30% said yes, 70% said no. So we're not growing up, our world, as you know, is not growing up in a home where dad's the provider and mom's at home, being there for the children, and that they're married and committed to each other. That's not the homes that our children are growing up into today anymore. So into these dysfunctional homes comes children. Children appear, and the family structure is very unstable. They're not committed to each other in a married way, and children appear because of a physical relationship, and they are born into dysfunctional homes. So what does the Bible say about this? Deuteronomy 4, actually chapter 6, 4 through 9, I missed the 6 on there. It's a formula for bringing up children and how to raise children. It's very familiar, but I'll read it. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. These words which I command thee this day shall be on thine heart. And here's the formula for teaching our children. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto the children. Thou shalt talk of them when you sit down in your house. So when you sit down around the table or whatever, you should be teaching them. When you walk, that's as you work. When you lie down, when you rise up, you're supposed to have these things written on your hearts and instilling them into your children. Bind them for a sign upon their hand, and they shall be as a frontlet between their eyes. Thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thy house and on thy gates. So as we go about, we're to be teaching the children the principles of God and who God is, whether we're at work, whether we're at home. We're to be teaching the principles of God. Having on our hands has to do with seeing labor from a biblical perspective. Having it on our foreheads is having a worldview, a biblical worldview of how God sees the world. On that post, as reminders, it was the dominating influence of their home. So what is the dominating influence in your home? Do you have scriptures on the walls? Do you have good music playing in your house? Is it an influence, a godly influence, for children to grow and develop? As I mentioned numbers of times in Ephesians, I mentioned the culture that Paul was writing to. And the culture that he was addressing here was how fathers abused their children in the Roman culture. The father had absolute control over the family. They could sell them as slaves. He could bind them in the fields in chains to work. He had absolute authority over them if he wanted to kill them or wanted to do away with them. He had absolute authority. He could take the law into his own hands. When a child was born, they were brought to the father and laid at his feet. If the father bowed, the child lived. If the father turned and walked away, the child was discarded. So you think about, we can't fathom that kind of a culture, right? But that's the culture Paul was dealing with in that day. That was then. What are we dealing with now? So what kind of, in general, our culture are we dealing with? Well, we're dealing with a generation who has been told they can do anything. And your bad behavior is just because you don't know how good you are. And so everybody gets a ribbon. We don't discipline them. We give them what they want. And we have a selfish generation stuck on themselves. And they don't know how to serve others around them in general. That's the picture of our culture. So Paul's teaching was countercultural then, and I believe Paul's teaching is countercultural today as well, in general. A number of studies that were done, a Harvard study of 4 and 5 year olds, with 90% accuracy after 5 years, they were able to predict delinquency in children. So they took 4 and 5 year olds, they did a study on them. And after 5 years, they were 90% accurate. And this is a non-biblical study. 4 necessary factors to prevent delinquency. 1 is father's discipline, fair and consistent. 2 was a mother's supervision at home. So when the child would get home or at home, that there's a mother in the home. A mom and dad who affection is on display in appropriate ways, that they express love to each other. And 4 was family cohesiveness, doing life together as a family. They said that if those 4 things are present, that the chances of a delinquent are 10%. Isn't it interesting how secular studies agree with the Bible? Another study from a doctor, 5 essentials in a parent-child relationship. 1 is love. 2 is discipline, that there's discipline given in good ways. That there's consistency in standard, in responses, in predictability. I just ponder here a little bit because I think I can be this way sometimes, that did you ever as children you want to do something and you say, well, I got to wait till the right time to ask mom or dad. Like, I can't do it right after he comes home from work. I can't do it if he's ready to go somewhere. I can't do it if he's stressed. And so we got to pick and choose how we talk to our parents about something. Maybe you don't have parents like that, but I can be that way. So I'm challenged in consistency. You know, am I consistent with, and it just brings so much stability to a child when they can see a consistent parent. The fourth thing is example. Don't expect children to live up to an example that you're not willing to live up to. And you may say that's a duh, but it's not always the case. And the fifth thing was man, the head of the home. That the man wears the pants and is the head of the home. Again, I find it interesting how these secular studies come up with biblical principles. So we jump into verse 4. It says, parents, dads, don't make your children angry. Don't provoke them to wrath. Don't exasperate them. And we have a delicate balance because we need to discipline, we need to correct, and we need to draw a line for our children. So there's that delicate balance we walk. And there's going to be irritations at home. Like, things are going to irritate you. And that's not what we're talking about here, little irritations. Like, I better be careful here, but like letting your shoes lay around or some other things, they can become huge irritations that can provoke. But in general, little irritations, that we're talking about things that really send your children off the edge and very make them angry. So how do you discipline them? Not cross the line to make them angry, creating hostility, animosity in the home, causing them to bolt. So I sent a text out to Steve Stutzman. I said, Steve, what would you say to dads about not provoking their children to anger? And he made me angry. He responded back, don't make them angry. I said, Steve, you can do better than that. No. So he sent me a list. So here, I'm going to read what he sent me. He said, there's something in a child that needs to be nurtured, a desire to be approved by dad. If a father fails to communicate approval to his children when they are growing up, If a father fails to communicate approval to his child when they are growing up, then the tank is so badly wants it. When they are growing up, he said the tank will be empty. They so badly wants this father's blessing and approval. And the child, will accuse a father, followed by anger and rebellion. Fathers, do not starve your child's desire for approval, but feed it, even in discipline and correction. A father must find a way to show his child that he approves of them and loves them. Every child wants to be loved and approved and know that he matters to mom and dad. So you may be asking, how do I know if I'm provoking them to anger? A man by the name of Paul Weaver put together a list of things that are indications that you may have lost your child's heart. And here they are. Number one is they're withdrawn. They seclude themselves. Number two is they don't respond to your words when you speak to them. Number three is they don't respond to your requests. Number four, they rebel. And number five, peers affect them more than you do. Signs that your child may not have your child's heart and something is wrong. How do we provoke our children? Again, this list is not conclusive, just some things that I've come up with from my own and from other sources. Number one is overprotection. Never give opportunity for independence. You got to take some risks, parents. I grew up with a friend who, I think his mom put toothpaste on a toothbrush, and he was 20-some years old. It was just, it'd make you shake your head. Another friend, he just couldn't hardly walk out the door without his mom carrying a first aid kit behind him. Just incredible. I was accused of letting Dallas do too much. I should have brought a picture, but he had a dirt bike that was probably twice his size when he was, I don't know, six or seven or eight. I took some flack for allowing him to do that. But at some point, you have to take some risks, and they need to be calculated risks. But you can't be overprotective and box them in. Encourage them how to make decisions. Walk with them through decisions. Help them know how to make decisions, because that's what you're training them to do, to think on their own. And here's one that, it's not original with me, but it's like, really? Affirm them in a bad decision. At least they're thinking. Even though it may be a bad decision, at least they're thinking. And you can affirm them in their thinking, but hey, let's think about it this way. Somehow we think our children are making decisions based on our knowledge, and we don't realize that they're just developing, and we need to help them learn to make decisions. The next one is failing to accept that times change. Times and generation change. Not allowing children to be part of their generation and making them become your generation. Realizing that my generation is gone and will never come back. I have some clothes that remind my children of former generations. They say, get rid of it. Did you ever hear, like, your parents say, when I was a boy? Well, there's when I was a boy. That's my only brother. When the temperature got to minus 30, that was a real picture at my house. Things were different. We looked a little different, didn't we? We dressed a little different. That was my generation. Those clothes were cool back then. My kids are laughing. And we did things differently. We actually put bales on elevators and put them in the mow. Like today, it's mostly round bales, and we did things differently. That's Dallas there, if you're wondering. He was little at one time. And we actually filled sallow differently. Like, we did things differently on the farm. Like today, they don't do it much this way anymore. They have big equipment, and they don't even use those chuck wagons anymore. But they still have the green tractors, Dean. And you know, there's my car. That's my first car. My wife hated that car. I dated her in that car. She would take it, and she said old men would comment how nice the car was, and she hated it. Actually, that's a Google picture. I couldn't find my car. My car was a limited edition. What am I saying? I'm saying that our generation is gone, and we can't expect our children to be part of our generation. Now, I'm saying that there's some things that should not be allowed. And there's three things that should not be allowed, regardless of generation. It's rebellion, it's immorality, and it's injustice. Rebellion to authority or those over you, immorality, and injustice, the way we treat people. Those three things should not change from generation to generation. But some of these other things we laugh at. Another thing to cause and provoke your children is favoritism. You see examples in the Bible with Isaac and Rebekah, and how Jacob and Esau were each their own favorite child, and what that caused in the family. Think about Joseph and his father, how he treated him differently than his other sons and gave him a coat of many colors. Just incredible, the dysfunction it causes. The comparing, why can't you be like, and you name your other sibling, your other child, why can't you be like them? That causes anger and hostility. How about unrealistic expectations? Parents who live their dreams out through their children, whether it's socially or in sports or music, they push their children into whatever, and their children aren't made for that. So I'm going to illustrate. I have a round hole, and I have a square peg. And you know, sometimes we try to make our children be like we want them to be, and we expect them to fit the mold. And here's what happens when that happens. So I'm going to put this square head, this square peg in this round hole. We may get them in, right? We may get the peg in. But, no, I can't get it off. What did I do that for? Look at the damage I've done putting that square peg in that round hole. I did a lot of damage to that child. Parents, I think we need to be students of our children. Not every child's the same. Every child is different. Our daughter Bethany learned totally different. She went to a school, and with her ADHD, she loved to doodle. And we had a teacher that was understanding that not every child's the same. And so he left her write and doodle on her papers while he was teaching. Now, some teachers would not have any room for that and say, you have to listen to what I want you to do and do it a certain way. But he understood her and the way she was made and allowed for that. So I would encourage you to study your children and to understand how God made them, first of all, so you know what you're dealing with. If you don't understand your child and don't understand why they're acting or functioning a certain way, and you try to drive them into a round hole, you're going to have problems. So I encourage you to study your children and go with how God made them. Next thing is discourage them. With no blessing, no honor, no approval. You can always be doing things better, always be doing things different. You're never good enough. I'm sure as parents were, I know I've done it, where my expectations weren't met. And you ruin a child, you damage a child whenever you are disappointed or get mad because they didn't perform a certain way. And I think a healthy way would be to take the situation and say, hey, let's talk about it. So this is what happened. This is how it was done. What can we learn and how can we do it differently and make it redemptive rather than damage the child and push them deeper into the ground and lose their hearts? We can violate them with powerful words. We can violate them physically. You know, they trust us as their parents to take care of them. And when we violate them physically, that's huge in a child's mind. There's a lot of damage happens. Or how about emotionally? What atmosphere What atmosphere are we creating at home? Is it an atmosphere of rest, or is it unrest? They're always on edge. It's not an emotionally stable home. And we can discourage them by withdrawing during punishment. Never withdraw during punishment. Be there with them through it. Stay present, even in discipline. Next one is failing to sacrifice for them. That you don't care about their interests, all you care about is your own interests as parents. And are you willing to sacrifice for your children and let them know that they are not a burden or just something that happened, but that you care about them and their interests? So this year we went on vacation, we went to L.A. Well, those of you who know me know I'm not a city guy. I don't connect with cities at all. But I told my girls, I said, wherever you want to go, I'll go because I had free airline miles in the U.S. So they chose L.A. and San Francisco. It's like, yeah, right. What am I going to do in L.A. and San Francisco? But I went because I knew they wanted to go. And, you know, that was one of our best trips. I enjoyed L.A., I really did. I didn't enjoy San Fran as much, but I enjoyed L.A. And I would even go back because I feared these traffic jams and all the horror stories of L.A., but I didn't experience any of that. So maybe if I would have experienced that, I'd have a different tune, but I enjoyed the trip. Do your children know that they're important to you, and what is important to them matters to you, and you're willing to sacrifice for them? Part of submitting to our children, remember I talked about submitting to their needs, is submitting to their needs as what their goals in life and dreams are as well. Next one is never being okay with mistakes. Are you okay with mistakes, allowing them to mess up? I hope you are, because they're going to mess up. They're going to do it. Are you okay with messing up? And let them learn from their mistakes. They have some crazy, off-the-wall ideas. Are you willing to let them learn from their mistakes? The hardest thing is that you know what's going to happen, you see it coming, but letting it happen is an incredibly hard thing. But it can be some of the most best lessons in life, is lessons that are learned the hard way. I'm sure if we had time, all of us could talk about lessons you've learned that you'll never forget, and you learned it the hard way, because mom or dad left it happen. The last one is don't discipline them in front of others. And that's pretty self-explanatory. Don't discipline them in front of others. It brings a huge amount of shame. I'm going to run through these next quickly. Four areas of teacher responsibility. Before I say that, we are called to train them. So it's don't provoke them, but bring them up. So it's assuming that these children aren't brought up, they're unregenerated, they're enemies of God, and weeds grow in gardens, but fruit's hard to come by, right? In your garden, weeds will grow easy, but fruit's hard to come by. So we need to take time and nurture our children. It takes work. And so the four areas that Jesus was taught was in wisdom, stature, favor with God, and favor with men. Four areas of a teaching responsibility for parents to bring their children up. Another, it talks about nurturing, is training and educating a child. Cultivating of mind and morals. How to be a disciple of the Lord. How to help them understand the voice of God. So you develop a fertile seedbed for God to work in their hearts. So as parents, think of yourself being a gardener, preparing your children to hear the voice of God, the voice of the Lord. And it is an amazing, as you do this, admonition talks about wise counsel and teaching right living. As you do this, it calls us to something. So here I am telling my son how to treat his wife or how to handle money, or how to forgive, how to love unconditionally. Doesn't it call us as parents up to something when we do that? It's huge. That as we teach our children and instill in them values, it's also calling us as parents up to more as well. So I'm teaching my son how to treat his wife, or how to treat his future wife. So am I really doing that? Or how to walk with God? Or how to, it just calls us up to so much more. The last one was of who? Bring them up in the ways of the Lord, not in the ways of Doug, but in the ways of the Lord. So parents, don't put your name in there. You're to bring them up in the ways of the Lord. How to bring them up, what they should know. Teach them that God is supreme, to love the Lord their God with all their hearts, to obey his word, to teach by example, to use life as the classroom, leave reminders of God's word around, and warn them of evils of the world. Bring your child up to know these things and to help them understand a biblical worldview. This is from a father looking back on his life as we wrap up here. A father looking back on his life. I wish I would have. I wish I would love my wife more in front of my children. I wish I would have laughed more. I wish I would have listened more. I wish I would have been more honest about my weaknesses to my children. I wish I had prayed more for my own spiritual growth. I wish I had been more encouraging and more praise. I wish I would have enjoyed the little things more. And lastly, he said, I wish I would love God more, seeking to adore God in front of them. You may be sitting here thinking, how do I get my child's heart back? Or maybe you realize that you've missed it. I mentioned Paul Weaver before. He had some other advice, how to get your child's heart back. And also Steve had some comments as well. And this is kind of a combination. Acknowledge your loss to your children's, that you've lost their heart. So acknowledge to your children that you've lost them. Communicate with your child. Communicate your affirmation, your love for them. Spend time with your child. Bless your child. Praise and bless your child. I think as long as there's life, there's hope. And whether your children here thinking about honoring your parents, or parents thinking how you honor your children, or how you've maybe provoked them in wrong ways. One thought I want to leave with you is that all through Scripture, grace comes after humility. God gives grace to the humble. And just being honest before God and say, God, I've really messed up. I need your grace. And doing that to your children, gather them around and maybe say, you know what, I've really messed up and I want to do better. And will you forgive me for whatever? And you want to chart a different course. As parents, we have so much bombarding us today. We have work. We have other responsibilities. We have things we like to do. But most of all, we're raising children for the Lord. The most important thing is raising our children for the Lord. And we all need prayer. We're not here to point fingers this morning. We're here to hear from the Lord, what he's speaking to our hearts about. So I would encourage you to encourage someone today in their role as a parent. Just affirm them with some good words today. them, that you pray for them or pray for them on the spot. Children, affirm your parents in ways they're getting it right. Affirm them in that. They go a long way in the relationship between child and parents. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. Thanks for your word and just so much richness and practicality in your word. Lord, as we shared on honoring and how to relate with our children, speak to our hearts. Encourage us, Lord, today. I pray for each mom and dad that they would have the courage to raise their children for you, even though there's a lot of hard things that come about in relating with children. Help them to sift through and press on towards the goal. I pray for grace, Lord. I pray for humility as we walk with you. In Jesus' name, amen.